You're listening to episode 210 of Women Worldwide. They say if you can make it to the five-year mark, then your business will survive. Well, I've got a guest today celebrating the 10th anniversary of her practice, and she's here to share her entrepreneurial insights with you. So stay tuned to learn more. Hi, I'm Deirdre Breckenridge. I've spent an entire career helping women to share stories, nurture relationships, grow their brands, but most of all, to find their voices so they can make a difference. Do you feel stuck? Do you want to power up your own voice? Women Worldwide features the stories of passionate women who have navigated big career challenges and some of the toughest changes. These professionals offer deep insights and advice to inspire you and to help you uncover what's holding you back. Let Women Worldwide ignite your passion so you can excel in life. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Women Worldwide. Before diving into today's show, just a quick thank you to all of you for tuning in. You're sharing the stories of our incredible guests, and you're really helping to amplify their voices and the work that they're doing. They love sharing their tips and insights with you. So let's get right to our guest today. This is a first for us. I'm chatting with a top pediatrician in my own home state who's been named on the New Jersey Family's Favorite Kids Doc for the years of 2011 through 2018. And joining me on the show today is Dr. Jill Garipoli-Petalino. It's a mouthful. And she's celebrating 10 years in pediatric medicine. Dr. Jill has grown her practice, and she's here to share what it's like to be an entrepreneur and her career journey with you. Jill, it's great to have you on my show. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Deirdre. It's great to be here. I love your work.
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for saying that. And it's great to have you as a guest on Women Worldwide. Now, I mentioned in the intro that you've just celebrated your 10-year anniversary of pediatric medicine. Maybe you could share what made you decide to become a pediatrician.
Okay, excellent question. And that's very common when medical students ask me or young patients ask me as well. And so I've had a lot of time to think about that question. I always wanted to help people. And, you know, as a young girl, and there's a lot of babysitting, so I liked children. And I thought there was something in that, but I never really developed that idea. So I thought I should become a lawyer because a lawyer, you know, is a good job to have. And it's an aspiration for a good student to do something like that. And then I realized I want to help people, and I don't know necessarily if law is the best way that I can use my talents. I ended up having a summer job at a hospital, and through a number of fortuitous events, I watched a baby delivered, and I said, oh my goodness, I want to take care of that baby. I don't want to do the delivery part, but I want to take care of that baby. And from then on, I just knew I wanted to become a pediatrician.
Oh, that's a great journey. I mean, how lucky to have a job, right, where you get to experience the birth of a child, and then it opens doors into an entire career. And you know what? I think not to mock any lawyers out there, but you know, you are helping children and their families in such a special way. But I'm sure that as you were going through the process, that maybe there were some challenges. So can you just share with us whether they were challenges in school or even making your way to your own practice?
Sure. You know, I was always a good student, and I loved learning. I was someone who always would be at every class. I never missed a day of school. Even in college, I was always at every class, never missed a day of school. Medical school, same idea. So I loved learning, and I just loved the idea of the classroom and being a student and being educated. I think where the challenge came was a sense of insecurity. You know, can I do this? Am I worth it? Not ever did I think, I'm a girl, can I do this? And my parents never made it like that. And I never grew up with that insecurity. But there was the insecurity of, people's lives are going to be in my hands. I don't want to fail anybody or kill anybody. Can I do this? And I can remember in medical school very early on, you know, you gain friends. We're all going through this at the same time. And friends of mine, when I said, I think I'm done, I think I need to stop. It's maybe not for me. They said, please, we don't want you to go. And it was just a little bit of nudging from good friends I made that made me say, I think I can do this. So the big challenge was self-doubt, insecurity. And even though I could handle challenges of hard classes and content that was difficult, I knew I was bright, but I didn't think I had the confidence to do it. And that was a big hurdle for me to overcome.
So Jill, you said something that was really interesting that I want to comment on about, you know, it wasn't that I'm a girl and I can't do this, but really you do. You have people's lives in your hands. And this is one of those questions, I don't know if it's going to be hard to answer, but do somewhere along the lines, do they teach you in school or do you just learn how to handle when things don't go the right way? Like, how do you handle that? Who teaches you that?
Unfortunately, no one. You know, no one really teaches. It's the, I think, the trial and error of making mistakes and figuring, you learn as you go. And I do remember one event that happened in my training where a child died, and, you know, many children died in medical school and residency. You see that a lot because you're in these tertiary care medical centers where very sick children come. But one child died, and I was not even close to being in charge because I was still a trainee, but I was part of that team. And when I missed something, I listened to myself, but I didn't carry it forth and tell somebody in a higher position because I was unsure of myself. And the only thing that the director said that he blamed me for was not listening to myself and further researching it and asking somebody to help. And he said, that's the only thing I want you to learn from this. There are other people that made their mistakes, but your mistake was you knew something was wrong and you didn't do it. So there's a lot of things like that where I learned by trial and error, but no one ever sat down and taught us, just like no one teaches us nutrition. And I'm realizing how vitally important that is in helping my patients be healthy. And I never learned about that in medical school and training. So there was a lot of nuance that we just weren't taught.
How did you, just as a sidebar, how did you sort of start learning about nutrition and what were some of your go-to sources?
Well, in the trenches, when I'm seeing young children and I have this unique opportunity as a pediatrician to mold young parents, because they're getting so much information overload. They're hearing and you know, with all of us, we're hearing so much about what you should eat. And then when you know that that's a superfood, 5 minutes later, another blogger tells you that's going to kill you. And so there's so much information. And so I feel like the nutrition aspect only came in the last couple of years when I started realizing, I think we might be getting duped by our food industry. And I'm watching children with type 2 diabetes as young children. I'm watching obesity. I'm listening to parents say what foods they're giving their children. Well, because everybody else in the daycare is getting that snack. And I realize I have to delve into this more. So I've been doing a lot of personal research in the past couple of years. And my eyes have been wide open lately.
That's really good to hear, because that makes you stand out as a professional. And I'm sure there are so many parents that appreciate that. I mean, the children certainly don't realize it as much as some of those moms and dads. Every day you get up and you get excited, and I'm sure you go into your practice or you're doing things around your business. What do you think keeps you motivated, keeps you focused and inspired for what you do?
Well, that's another thing that I think about a lot, because there is so much talk and it's a reality. There's physician burnout, and we could go into a whole nother talk about why the healthcare system is making doctors want to leave. However, I have to think about what makes me want to stay. And it's these little children. And I know that, again, I have this opportunity, not necessarily to change their lives directly, but to change these parents the way they're modeling for their children. And what keeps me motivated is that I sit in an office sometimes and look at these people saying, why are you listening to me? You know, I'm maybe 10 years older than you. I don't know much more, but I have learned and appreciated that I do know more. And I've had a specialized training that helps me be an authority to these people. So when I can look my best and walk the talk and do these things on my own in my everyday life, they trust me more. And I find that when the parents say, I've read all of this information and my mother says this and Google says this, what do you think? And I said, oh, my, this is a perfect opportunity for me to have the best information. And I try to stay up to date for that very reason, that they can go and fact check me and I'll be right. But it's so important that I really talk to these parents from a place of truth and trying to help their children. I think that's so helpful for me.
Oh, definitely. Do you feel that parents are more receptive to different things that you're sharing with them than, let's say, when you first started out?
Absolutely, I do. And in the realm, mostly, which is so surprising to me, in the realm of this more ethereal universe kind of picture, I'll say to these children with an ear infection, even little 3 and 4 year olds, I'll say to them, remember, so your ear has a boo-boo and we're going to give you medicine to fix it. But remember, you are healthy and you're strong and you're going to get back 100% to your full health again. Now, if I said that 10 years ago, the parent would look at me. The kid would probably be receptive to it, but the parent would look at me and like, what are you talking about now? Because we're all so in tune to the universe is talking to us and listen to your inner self. I am in such a great position to be able to say what sounds like foo-foo stuff, and they're all eating it up. And I can't tell you how many parents have said to me, thank you, that helped me. Hearing that helped me too. And that's where I just get so much sense of value out of that.
Oh my gosh, that is so valuable, because the positive self-talk alone, like, you know, as an adult, you know, and
it, for sure,
when you say positive things, you feel that, you create your environment to be positive. So saying that for a child or the children you're seeing, and to have them believe that, I mean, that's a load that's lifted. And for that parent, it's the same thing. I can't say that, I mean, if I go back to when I was little and see my pediatrician, which I do remember, I was really, I know he was a good pediatrician, but I was frightened of him. I don't remember anything positive about visits to the doctor. And something tells me that visits are more positive when they see Dr. Jill. Is that true?
And it is true. And when the parent says, I don't know any kid that likes to come to the doctor, my kid likes to come to see you. And that, and you know, you try to be loving, and I walk in, I don't even look at the parent when I walk in. I look right at the child, no matter how young or old they are. Part of it is to assess, is the child toxic? Are they sick? Are they not? But also because I'm there for that child. And when I do that, I feel like I give them a sense of respect that they're a part of the team, and I get so much more out of them. And I think they do listen. I mean, there's so much out there that influences children that makes it hard for the truth to stay in them, you know, because there's the social media and all the videos and the TV and the screen time and the crappy foods that they're eating because they're tainted by the food industry. However, I do think that somewhere deep inside they're hearing me, and it's because they're not afraid, because they know I love them. And I tell every one of them at the end of the visit, I love you so much. And I mean it with all my heart.
That's so beautiful. I can't ever remember Dr. Pollack saying he loved me. Holy cow. Jill, you are a new breed. I love that. I want to pivot a little bit to your business. So, right, you are an entrepreneur. You've started your own practice.
Yes, ma'am.
How hands-on are you with, you know, there's the business end of things, and then there's the patient side of things, because you're seeing patients daily, probably. How do you balance that?
Well, as a solo practitioner, I have a physician assistant extraordinaire who works with me. But as a solo practitioner, I have no choice but to be 100% invested in both sides of it. I would love to just go in the room and take care of the patients and come out and someone else takes care of everything else. But unfortunately, well, fortunately, I chose this. Fortunately, I have the opportunity to be both. And at the beginning, when I first decided to go off on my own, I had about 8 years of experience as an employee. and I started the practice and I realized, oh my God, I don't understand billing and coding and all that part of it. What I also didn't understand is how to manage employees and how do you keep them invested? How do you keep them motivated? So there's a lot of different business aspects that I had to learn. And it's trial and error. And there were some mistakes you make and you learn from them and you don't make them again. But I embrace every mistake because it was an opportunity for growth. So I had to keep that positive mindset. But I feel like after the past couple of years of getting involved in having a consultant come, I put my ego down and I had my consultant come in and tell me what I could be doing better. We use that. We're getting more revenue because we're doing things smarter, but I'm also helping my patients have a better experience. So I, as much as I have no problem being 100% a pediatrician because I love what I do. I don't work ever. However, the business I've had to really learn, and I listen to podcasts and I read books constantly about how to be a better leader. And I'm trying to lead by example, and I hope it's working. And my staff, thank God, we have a low turnover rate because they want to be there. And so it's a tough balance, but I think in a small practice like I have, it's more manageable than having five offices with 20 doctors. I don't have that. And I chose that on purpose.
No, it's good that you chose what excites you and makes you feel comfortable. And the fact that there is low turnover, that does say something about
for the, sure. I think so.
Team, right. The team that you have. And I want to sort of talk about building a team, because as a business owner, whether you're a pediatrician or you own some other kind of company, it's really the people we surround ourselves with that help us. So what do you look for in somebody who's joining your team?
Well, I look for people obviously that are go-getters and that are present in the day-to-day. You need people that are going to show up every day and be reliable. I will tell you that in my line of work, we have medical assistants. We don't have nurses in our practice because pediatrics, in my little practice, I don't necessarily need a nurse, but I have a medical secretary. I have medical assistants and they do their training. And what I hear a lot, and I think a lot of pediatricians, a lot of doctors in general, everyone has, they have to get their hours. They've got to work. They need the paycheck. They live paycheck to paycheck. And it is a little bit different because I am salaried and I have, you know, have my own business. So I can pay myself and my physician assistant on a salary. But these other girls, they are living a different life and I have to put myself in their position. And so I'm trying to get people who want to be there. But I do understand that this is a job for them. This isn't their baby. This is my baby. And so I have to let that go sometimes when I feel like, why did they step over that Band-Aid on the ground? Why did they not just pick it up? But I realize that they'll do that in their own home, but this is not their home. And I try very hard to make it that way. And they do tell me, this is our office just as much as it is yours. And we're getting there with that. But it's tough to, if you're going to be on this a pedestal and think you're better than your staff and you're going to delegate, but you're going to do it through fear. And if you don't come in, we're going to fire you. I don't try to do it that way because I'm not going to get any engagement that way.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I think that whatever I used to say when I owned a larger company, I wouldn't ask you to do anything that I wouldn't do myself.
For sure.
Right. So, you know, if I'm picking up a Band-Aid, then you would be picking up a Band-Aid too.
Yes.
Comes with the territory. But I'm wondering, because you talked about the business side of it and, you know, some of the things you learn as a business owner, do you delegate some of those roles, whether it is to an in-house person or you outsource your, let's say, your bookkeeping or, you know, whoever is answering the phones? How do you do that? Are you delegating?
Well, sure. I learned my beginning when I first started the new practice, I had a partner and there was a lot of, I don't know if it was fear or selfishness, but there was a lot of on the partners and of them wanting to do everything because they could do it better and they knew better. And I understand that. But when I started, I went off on my own and started my own solo practice. I thought of Ronald Reagan's quote, and I'm going to read it to you because I think it's very important. He said, "Surround yourself with the best people you can find, delegate authority, and don't interfere as long as the policy you've decided upon is being carried out." And that is what I'm using in my practice. I delegate, I make sure that my staff knows what I need of them, and I leave them to do it. And I feel like that's giving them a sense of importance, a sense of independence, and it's helping my practice run so smoothly because my girls really, they're invested because they know that if they don't do their XYZ job, we're not going to have whatever, you know, we're not going to have Band-Aids if the girl who's responsible doesn't make sure to reorder the Band-Aid. So from every level, I feel like delegating is so important, and I do check in, but I leave them to do their work and don't micromanage.
Well, that's really good. And that was a great quote. How much do you rely on open communication with your staff?
Oh, all the time. And we all, I don't have many personal close friends. I'm with these girls in my office all the time. And granted, they're 10 and 20 years younger than me. However, I do find that we feel like sisters. We feel like friends. We all share the personal stuff that goes on in our lives, and we all know a lot about each other. So, I feel like we all just try to work together to be friendly and to be family there. And that just helps us all have a better work day.
I love that you said that you're friends and you're family. And it does sound like a really good work day with you. Jill, I'm going to ask you to hold your thoughts for just a moment. We're going to take a super quick break and give some love to our sponsor. And when we get back, Jill and I are going to dive back into the conversation about her work, and we're going to talk about building trust.
Awesome.
Creating brand loyalty requires a unique blend of strategic communications and innovative technology. Yesterday's techniques won't work. Today, you have an opportunity to expand your communications approach with fresh, creative, and effective ways to power up your brand voice through new channels and to interact with more value and meaning. Pure Performance Communications will work with you to move audiences from awareness to action and impact. You'll foster greater engagement and forge stronger relationships along the way. Let us help you uncover what's holding you back and help you to carve out a marketing PR roadmap to success. Visit us at pureperformancecom.com. That's pureperformancecom with two M's.com. Now back to Women Worldwide with Deirdre Brecker.
Welcome back to the show. Dr. Jill Garipoli-Petalino and I were just chatting about how and why she became a pediatrician, what it's like to own your own practice, and she also shared some of the challenges as well. So Jill, I want to go right back into the conversation. A little earlier, you had mentioned the word trust. We also talked about your team and the friendships and you're like a family. So let me ask you this. What does trust mean to you? And do you feel trust is earned or it's there at the start until it's broken?
Sure. Well, thankfully, I have a fantastic family. I've really have to tell you, in my personal life, I've never really been let down. I truly believe people are inherently good. So my thought about trust is it is definitely present at the start until it's broken. There are people, of course, who've been hurt enough that you have to prove yourself to that person before they let you in. I'm just totally the opposite. And I don't know if it's a weakness or a strength or what, but I believe that people, I trust them until they show me that they don't deserve my trust anymore. So that's definitely how I see the world.
Oh, that's really good. I mean, giving people the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And something tells me you have to be a good judge of character. You know, you're bringing people around you. And I believe in, you know, the people around you or should lift you up and support you.
I agree.
You. So do you feel that this sort of is the way you've positioned yourself? It's your network and therefore trust is a lot easier to give.
For sure, 100%. I truly believe that we are all deliberate creators, and whether we think we're deliberate or not, we're all creating. And so the people you hear all this, the people who you're around or the people you'll be like, or when something comes to you, it did not come out of the oblivion. It came out of the oblivious. So you didn't even hear what you were thinking or putting into your experience. And then when that person shows up and breaks your trust, it wasn't that person doing it. It was something that you had in your vibration. I feel that 100% with, you know, with who I am. So the thing with me is that I just feel like I'm trying so hard to be a good person, see the good in people. And if I'm deliberately creating a bad environment, I have to stop, readdress myself, think about what thoughts I'm thinking. And I just kind of change it around so that I project my good day in the morning. I do all my meditations to think about what my good day is going to be like. So when most of the time, thank God, I do have a good day, I knew it was going to be because I didn't create any space for the lack of trust or any kind of, you know, negativity.
Right. Because what you think is what you bring into your own environment.
100%.
So, right. Setting the intentions. I know I usually set my intentions in the morning, although they say set your intentions before you go to bed at night and you'll wake up, like revisit it and then move forward. There's so many books, Jill, about how the thoughts that we have in our conscious mind, if we could get them into our subconscious, that actually helps us to create the environment that we want to have.
And I think more time that we spend doing that, I think it's great. Morning, night, midday, I don't care when. I think the more time we spend doing that, the less time we have to hear that inner doubt and all those other little things that come up and creep in, the fear. We don't give that an audience because we're spending so much time being grateful and projecting what we want our future to be like.
Right. You know, you mentioned the inner doubt. I remember reading the book, The Untethered Soul, by Michael Singer.
Book.
Right. And he talked right in the beginning about the roommates in your head.
Absolutely.
It's like, right. There's no room for those roommates.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously. So this inner doubt that you mentioned plays right into his theory as well. It's fascinating. So what about building good relationships? I mean, if you have a basis of trust to start with, of course, that could lead to a good relationship. But when it comes to parents coming in, and even those children, how do you build relationships with them?
Well, that is such a delicate thing in pediatrics. You have very vulnerable new parents who really, you know, obviously most of them have never done this before. And they're coming in with all their downloads from how they were raised and what they're reading and the mom groups. And they're trying so hard to be so good that I think they're getting overwhelmed. It is a very touchy position to be with someone who is hormonal. And you can't doubt that. I'm not judging any woman. I'm saying that after birth, there's things that go on hormonally that make you a little bit more sensitive. And they have this little life that they've got to keep alive. And so I have to be very gentle about building trust. And I include everybody in the team. And I say, your mother, whether you want her to be or not, is going to be a part of our team. And Google, whether we all want it or not, is going to be a part of our team. And whether you think so or not, you are the expert on your baby. You know your baby. I will do the medical school part for us. You will do the hands-on every day. And so by making them a team, I don't really feel like I'm having too much trouble because this is not the white-haired older man, I am holier than thou, looking down on you, telling you what you need to do. I'm a young woman and it just doesn't even work that way if I tried. So I feel like keeping them as a team from the beginning helps with trust. And I feel like keeping myself educated with the right information. If they do look me up and fact check what I'm saying, they can come back and say, you know what, you were right. And so I'm using that as my foundation and then just listening. It's so doctors, they say, don't even spend, there's some statistics I don't know, but you don't even give the people like 30 seconds to talk without interrupting them. So I try very hard to stay quiet, let them feel, let them talk, let them express themselves. And then I speak. And then that hopefully helps build a relationship that they're valued and worthy in the office visit.
Oh my gosh, you just said so many things that I want to unpack because it was all really good. When you started the answer to that question, you talked about sort of the mom being on the team. And, you know, the fact that you're building her self-confidence, because whether it's your first child, maybe that's a little bit harder than it, let's say it's your sixth child, but you know, to have a doctor say to you that you're a part of the team, I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there right now who are saying, what? No, yeah. Doctor ever made me feel like I was a part of the team.
It's and so important.
Yeah, it really is. And then this whole listening. I think that listening is such a skill that people talk about listening all the time. And I wrote about this in my Answers for Modern Communicators book, where you shouldn't be listening just to formulate your next response to get your message.
So many people do.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. But it's actively listening. And I think that is a trust builder right there.
For sure. And I also tell them, and again, for me, I see so many people every day, and I try very hard to, when I walk in a room, these people need me to act as if I'm going in for them that day. Like they're my only patient. I try to do that as tired as I am. But that little comment of, you know what? You're doing great. You are doing great. The baby's healthy. You're doing great. That little thing helps them feel that little sense of confidence. So we got to be so careful with what we say, but I feel like even the littlest things, it sounds corny. And I don't know if they're even hearing me or not about that, but I think that they go away feeling more confident when I say those little things.
Little things matter, and I bet they are. I bet it's sinking in. And it's also a very positive attitude that you bring to the table. When a doctor walks into the room who is harried, rushed, doesn't feel, you know, and you're the patient and you don't feel like they're really paying attention or hearing what you're saying or
dismissing a mile away. Yeah.
Yeah. Or sometimes, I don't want to knock doctors because it's really difficult what they do, but if they're dismissive and not listening. Yeah. So I think I like your approach so much.
I'm just trying to treat people the way I want them to treat me. And no one's at 100% all the time, but I try really hard to be as present as possible.
That's great. What do you think? This question is tough, but what concerns you as a pediatrician? And you mentioned Google, the internet, you talked about nutrition. Are those the worst offenders or is there more?
I think, yes, of course. Vaccine hesitancy is a whole nother topic. The nutrition that we're putting into our children, I think that we're unfortunately so, myself included, I'm just learning so much. I'm at the tip of the iceberg, but there is so much about nutrition and things that we've been told that are very wrong. And I feel now a sense of duty. The more I know now, I have to pass that along. But I'm very concerned about children are watching every single thing their parents are doing, and they're feeling the energy when a parent is anxious and the baby is screaming all the time and the parent says, I don't know what to do. It's a vicious cycle because the parent's anxiety is feeding the child's insecurity. And I feel like there's so much of that. And they say that you're pretty much set by the time you're seven, with all those early imprints. And I just want so badly, and I try every day to try to help them from the very beginning, give that child a sense of self-soothing, let them soothe themselves, let them create, let them feed themselves, all those kind of things that these children don't have the hangups that adults are having. So that's what concerns me, that people are just not paying enough attention to these things like diet, nutrition, and how their energies are transmitting to their children.
And that's such a fine line. How do you, do you gently broach that topic with a parent if you feel they're not going in the right direction? And is that like an insult for their parenting, or do you think they're receptive, or it's how you come across?
Oh, definitely. You have to walk a fine line, because some people who do not want to change, people who want to bed share, for example, I say, do you enjoy it? I love it. I love it. I know my baby's not going to be in my bed forever. Do you get good sleep? We all get wonderful sleep. Then you know what? Don't change it. If that's what works for you, don't change it. I'm not going to tell them what they have to do. Now, don't feed your infant honey. Well, I have to tell you that because it'll kill your baby if they, God forbid, ingest botulism toxin. So there's certain things we have to be serious about. Babies on their back to sleep. Things like that are important. But when it comes to those finer things, you have to be very gentle. And even talking about a child's weight, to say, well, your child is fat. I mean, you cannot do that. And I know many pediatricians do that, and it's just not helpful at all. So it's really, there's a very fine line with, and you have to read the parent too. If they're going to get weepy and they say, I am sick and tired of being sick and tired. I don't want my kid in the bed. I don't want to keep getting up every night. Then I can have the firm talk of let him cry it out. But if I'm going to go in there and tell a family to do that and they're not ready, I get shut off completely and I'm a cruel, mean person for offering it. So it's a very fine line.
That's really interesting. So a lot of this, you did mention about parents being anxious, right? But now I'm going to shove that over on you. Not so much anxious, but stress. Like there's real stress that must come with your work as a pediatrician. How do you handle stress in the day-to-day?
Well, I feel like what's the most draining is the mental hard work of decision making for any of us. It is very, very difficult. And so I feel that by getting myself into a good place and having a routine every day helps me have the least amount of stress so that I can make those big decisions. And am I going to send the child to the ER? Am I missing a developmental delay? All those kind of questions that I feel are very important to me not to miss. I have to be in a really good space. So I really do see the value of meditation, and it doesn't have to be quiet monk meditation. We're not trying to do that because our brains, it's like telling your heart to stop beating for a while. You can't tell your brain to stop thinking. It's always going to think, but it's directing guided meditations. I do that in the morning, very short little bit because I don't have much time. I also make sure I do get to the gym because I feel that the stress relief and the endorphins of that are very, very vital to me. And good sleep. I have prioritized my sleep in the past couple of years so seriously that it's on top of the list. I'm so much more functional and a better person getting that extra sleep, that, you know, the 8 hours instead of 5 or 6. And so those are ways I deal with stress. And deep breathing.
That's really, that was great advice. Two things. One, I think it's so interesting that you talk about the routine, because even as parents with children, you're sort of taught that you need to get them into a routine. Like routines are good when you're younger.
Thrive on it.
Yeah. So for young children, for adults, routines are good. Good sleep. Sometimes, and this is a societal thing, and yes. I fell into this myself. I remember earlier when I was an entrepreneur, I would literally be bragging about, oh yeah, I only get 3-4 hours a night. I'm superwoman. No. And do you know what, Jill? It wasn't until I had worked with Navy SEALs. Yeah, it was really cool. They were former Navy SEALs developing nutraceuticals. One of them was a natural sleep aid. And learning about their rigorous tours and how many hours they had to put in with no sleep, the only thing that, and it was crazy, some of the things that they went through, the only thing that they could really rely on after to mend their bodies and their minds was sleep.
That's right. I think it's even more important than nutrition and exercise. Sleep is so vital.
Unbelievable. And I remember reading, and maybe you can comment if you've seen this or not, that when you only sleep like 4 or 5 hours, it's literally as if you have had a 6-pack of beer.
Right.
I'm not a beer.
That's right.
Like you're drunk.
Yeah, I agree with you. Absolutely.
So why would anybody want to function that way?
I think because that you've got to binge watch that show, or you didn't prioritize earlier enough in the day. And so you're catching up on all the rest of it that you have to do, or you fall asleep on the couch. I think it's a matter of discipline, but we're also, again, we're duped into believing you have to watch the show. You can't miss this episode. And TV has done a lot of that for people. And and there's no judgment. We're just all, unfortunately, I feel like we're all like victims of this brainwashing.
Yeah. I mean, you have to rely on yourself to break that cycle. I mean, I love Netflix. My husband and I, we're so guilty. House of Cards, Scandal.
Right.
There's a lot of different series that Suits, but you have to know when to cut it off. Like it's a little bit, and then you can have a little bit more later on. It should never, everything in moderation.
I agree. Self-discipline, yeah, mm-hmm. And prioritizing. And if you don't prioritize how you want your life to be, I feel like you're going to be just a whimsical, you know, leaf flowing to the ground, whatever the wind takes you. And I feel like when you make it, you're deliberate about your day and deliberate about your life, more good thing, the doors open and you realize the benefits of all of it.
Yeah. Well, you said to the deliberate about your life, two things, deliberate about your life and discipline. Especially if you are an entrepreneur and a business owner.
Right. For sure.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask you an advice question. What advice can you share with maybe other professionals about being deliberate and right. being able to pursue their goals and their ambitions?
Well, one phrase that helps me understand if I should do something or not is, if something makes you, and I heard it, this, none of this is my own. This is what I've read and heard over all these last months and years of downloading all this important information. If something makes you a little bit scared, but a lot of bit excited, you should go for it. So when it comes to entrepreneurialism and doing things on your own, yeah, you should be scared because you've never done it before. And that's just how our innate body responds to things. But if you're more excited than worried about it, then you should go. And I tell you, as a person who jumped into this, I had my nose in the books for so many years. I really didn't learn common sense or street smarts. I just never had the chance. I got book smart. So I knew that was going to be a big challenge for me to make sure that I put the right people in my corner to make sure that I could advance. So I think having the right people on your side to help you in the ways that you feel like you might be lacking is super important. But having that faith in yourself that if you don't try, you'll never know what you can achieve. And I think that's a huge thing. One of my own personal doctors, she kept telling me for years, I'm going to go out and go on my own. And every year I'd go in for my visit and she'd not do it. And I'd say, what about, she finally did it. And she said, your voice was in my head saying, yet another year, you're here again. And so she finally did it. And it's scary, but she found that person within her that said, I'm going to do this. And I'm so proud of her. But I'm also, I think that's so super important to not be afraid to try.
That's awesome advice and a great story. Thank you for sharing that. And Jill, last question, super easy. Where can people find out more about you and your practice?
Well, I have a fantastic husband who does a beautiful job of keeping our Facebook page and our website completely up to date. For our professional site, we have www.healthykidsnj.com. And that is our website. And then Facebook, we're Healthy Kids Pediatrics. And so much good content is on there. We have a blog that you can link to. And so there's really good stuff there.
And you know what? Just a shout out to Marcello.
Wonderful.
Yes. And who has been on Women Worldwide, who is an author, speaker, rock star. Waving high.
Fantastic. And that's one of the best people that you can put in your corner, a spouse or a partner who is, as a woman, who is not intimidated by you and tries to put you down, which I've had experienced myself in the past. You want somebody who's going to lift you up. And when you find that, you hold on to it. And that's what I've done.
Oh my gosh, that's beautiful. Well, Jill, thank you so much for sharing all of
your awesome. Thank you.
You're awesome. Loved your insights, your tips, everything that you're doing. We appreciate your time and we just appreciate you so much. So thank you.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And I want to thank all of our listeners today. Thank you so much for tuning in. Keep amplifying the stories and please share how you're feeling. Let us know what you're thinking on Twitter. So tweet us, post on Facebook, rate us on iTunes. We always love to hear from you. And we just so appreciate all of your feedback. Okay, friends, until our next episode, stay focused, energized, and feeling empowered. Thank you.